Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, it is Memphis, all Memphis versus the NCAA. Got a little fantasy football content because I hear that's what y'all kind of dig. Also, my man, DJ Mike Hitman, will be joining us. But first. All right, so I was in California this weekend. A friend of mine got married, went and checked that out. Some of y'all may have seen that on the internet. But anyway, while I'm there, I'm at my homeboy's house. And it's always interesting, like, when I'm with people that, like, they enjoy sports, but they don't just kind of live it like I do, you know, kind of with the job or whatever. So I'm at my homeboy's house, homie Clarence. I'm entertaining his two small children. And then I'm like, hey, yo, you mind if we turn on LSU Alabama? You know, Gabe, you from California. College football don't really move the needle like that. Out that way.
It doesn't, unless you're USC and you're undefeated, right?
Yes. It takes all those things like coming together. Like, what would you, a UCLA grad, what would UCLA have to do to make LA really be like, oh snap, we own it now?
Win the national championship.
It would be the fourth quarter of the championship game. They'd be like, oh snap, y'all heard UCLA good? Yeah, man, everybody turn it on. And so I'm there and I turn on the LSU Bama game and I got into it in the first half. They were lighting them up at that point. The game ultimately turned out to be one score in the end, and that is going to matter. Let me be old man right fast. In 1993, Florida State and Notre Dame played. It was 1-2, and this was supposed to be the team for Florida State, that they could turn the corner and they could win a national championship. Notre Dame wound up winning that game by 1 touchdown, but what was crucial was there was a play in that game where Charlie Ward threw a pass that was deflected and on some rabbit's foot type stuff went to, I want to say, Kez McCorvey. He catches it in the back of the end zone. It became crucial because Florida State lost that game by one score rather than losing by 2 scores, which affected the perception of what the loss was, okay? So the following week, Notre Dame plays Boston College. It may not have been the following week, but subsequently. Notre Dame played Boston College. They lost to Boston College. Florida State wound up being number one at the end. They beat Nebraska in the Rose Bowl, and it finished with Florida State number one, Notre Dame number two. There's no way that Florida State wins that national championship if McCorvey doesn't catch that ball in the back of the end zone. There's no way, right? It was the matter of that game being one score. What we got in this LSU-Alabama game that's very similar is, I think it was Devontae Smith caught that slant late on Stingley and went like 88 yards, and that's what brought this back to being a one-score game. So the chances of Alabama getting in the playoffs come up really on the basis of that one play. Like, there's still a good chance that they're going to wind up there because they made it happen on that one play. But I got to admit, Gabe, I came out of that game feeling like awfully correct about a lot of things. I told people, just you watch. LSU come out there and they win that. I thought the game was going to be a track meet no matter what. But I'm going to look. LSU come out here and win that game, and it's going to be Joe Burrow, number one overall pick. You're going to start hearing that a lot more than you had before. Gabe, you hearing what people talking about Joe Burrow in the draft? You hear what they saying?
The sneaky fast.
That's right. He is an athletic dude. He is surprising people in that. And I guess I don't know why people are so surprised that he's athletic, because Ohio State, with the offense they've been running for the last 7-8 years, you can't play in that unless you can move. Right? Like, how wild is it, Gabe, that people are less surprised that Cardale Jones could move than they were that Joe Burrow could? And Cardale Jones is big as a truck. That's what assuming gets you. Anyway, that's not the big thing about that game. Like, that game, I mean, it was a good college football game. It did not disappoint. It entertained for everybody that had been looking forward to that game being played for so long. Boom. We were all there. This right here is what wound up making this game why we need to talk about it right now. This is Ed Orgeron. And again, if there are two things I've ever been wrong about in sports, it was, why in the world are you hiring Dabo Swinney, and why in the world are you making Ed Orgeron the head coach? I am not big on that continuing out the interim thing. Both cases, it seems to have worked out pretty well. And so Orgeron from Louisiana, he went to LSU for a little while before he had to go somewhere else, all of that stuff. And, you know, he's Ed Orgeron. He talks like Ed Orgeron. And here is Ed Orgeron giving the speech to the players after the game.
Change the narrative.
You understand that?
Yes, sir.
We're going to beat their in recruiting. We're going to beat their every time they see us.
Oh, God.
You understand that?
Yes, sir.
Wrong thing. What you?
Yo, man, Gabe, I don't know if you saw this, but Orgeron said that he didn't regret doing it, but he did regret that it went public.
Which is how you have to be, right? Because he said it, so of course he's not going to regret saying it. He just regrets that other people heard it.
It's an understandable thing. However, Ed Orgeron, the best thing maybe to happen in college football in like the last 10 years is the fact that that went public. That is the best part of all of this. Here is why that going public is the best part of all of this. LSU Alabama was a game that was good every year. This is what turns LSU Alabama into a rivalry, is this right here. Because look, man, Saban is no fun, right? Like, I'm actually higher on Saban than most people are because I think that Saban actually truly legitimately cares about his players. And that goes a long way with me. I really do think that he cares about his players. Part of why I like Cal in basketball a lot more than other people do, because I think he legitimately does care about his players in a very Machiavellian sort of way. But I do think he cares about his players. But Saban is just no fun because everything is so like buttoned down. We ain't never had no good Saban smack talking quote or anything else. That doesn't happen. And as a result, we don't really have anybody doing that stuff back to Alabama because they're so nameless and faceless and just a cold killing machine that don't nobody want no parts of poking them or anything like that. And then we wind up with Orgeron. Hey, can we play Orgeron one more time? The Cookie Monster was getting crunk. We got that.
Change the narrative.
You understand that?
Yes, sir.
We gonna beat that in recruiting. We gonna beat that every time they see us.
How's that?
You understand that?
Yes, sir.
Wrong thing. What? You.
Yeah. Dog, that's what we need. Gabe, can you imagine how mad the Alabama fans are about that?
Oh, they are heated.
Furious. And by the way, now might be the time to do it. Okay, now one thing with Alabama we have to remember, and I undersold this coming into the game. It was a big thing for me at the beginning of the year. I undersold it as we went, which was that defense was young. Like, I want to say I saw something like 3 or 4 freshman starters that were out there. They lost all those inside linebackers earlier in the year, and they went out there and they gave up 46 points to LSU at home, the most points they'd given up in the Saban era at home. Like, I mean, that is wild to watch an Alabama team give up that many points. Like, that is staggering. That is not what you're going to expect to see from a Nick Saban team, right? Maybe this thing is getting like a little wobbly over there. Now, of course, wobbly over there means you're a top 5 team as opposed to being a top 2 team. But like, you go look at recruiting this year, for example. I want to say Clemson has 6 5-stars. Alabama has 2 or 3. Like something in that zone. I think that's part of the 24/7 rankings. But that's where they are. Like Alabama's been on top for so long and in such a way that you lose sight of the fact that people can gradually chip away at that. Now with LSU, I do think that maybe there's some reason for like caution, when it comes to what Orgeron had to say. Cause if you go look at what Orgeron has done since he got there, it looks a lot like the Les Miles tenure that wasn't good enough, right? 3-loss season, 4-loss season. This is one of those years that, you know, Miles has every now and then. Miles had one in 07. Miles had another one in 2011. I want to say there was one later also where they really seemed like they could kind of put it together and then it kind of fell apart at the end. But we need the fun of this. The thing that stinks about college football right now as it stands is the money's gotten so big and that it's become so corporate that we don't wind up with these beefs that come up like this. Like, you don't have that many guys who are of it in the way that Orgeron is of it, being a dude from Louisiana, where he cares this much about it and where you get that level of passion from him about just the mere idea that we won this game. This is the game this dude was hired to win, because losing this game is in large part what got Les Miles fired, right? What got Les Miles out of there was an understanding that looking around at the way that Les wanted to play offense, you can't score enough points playing offense the way that Les Miles wants to and win in this modern SEC. You cannot do it. And so they went and got this dude, and he went out and got the dude, and now they're up there putting up points in that way. And now they out here talking smack. Roll Tide, F you. Yes, here for it. Won every single bit of it. So, like, that LSU game next year at Tiger Stadium, do you realize how cracking it's going to be around that one? Like, around this one, we're just kind of like, wow, 1 versus 2, that'll be great. That game can be 10 versus 11, and it'll still be crack-a-lackin'. And it'll be crack-a-lackin' because now we got some feeling into it. Now we got a whole different level of heart that is surrounding this game. Oh boy, that's gonna be dope. But you know, we gotta talk about that other thing, right? I'll tell you guys a little story. Gabe, I can tell them the story about last week, right?
Tell the story.
So we were doing a podcast,
and want to do a little segment, a little part of it about Trump and him going to the game and what that was going to turn into. And it went a little long because I got to rolling. And I was like, Gabe, check it out. You know, let me know what you think about it. And he's like, cool. I edited it up and I got it. And I was like, oh, damn, all the good stuff gone. And so we're like, nah, we just not going to run it. No big thing, right? It was predictive of what I thought was going to happen at the game. But now that the stuff has actually happened, I feel like we can talk about this. Gabe, apparently Trump got a rousing ovation in Tuscaloosa when he came there for that game.
He did. Has he received ovations at every sporting event he's been to? Not the World Series, right?
I don't think he went to the, well, he went to the World Series, right? And they gave him the blues.
Yes.
It was a little hit or miss at the MMA, kind of depending on where you were sitting, from what I could tell. But on this one, look, apolitical observation. That man was looking for applause, right? I don't think there's any question about that. And if there was any place that he was going to get applause, it was going to be something in the neighborhood of 100,000 white folks in Alabama, right? That's the base. He showed up. He got the ovation that he was looking for. And I say this, and I think this is a fair question to ask all y'all. Just think about this for a second. Hey, man. If you had your black friends in town for the weekend and you were like, yo, I got to find something to do that'll entertain them and make them feel comfortable, you wouldn't take them to a Trump rally. It's just not the place you would go, right? Right there. Just not the place that you would go. And all of a sudden for Alabama, who I'm sure had all the recruits there for this big game, it turned into a Trump rally. So, Gabe, let's do this math right here. Alabama lost the game. Ed Orgeron hit them with the bleep you. And on their big recruiting weekend, it turned into a Trump rally. How do you think it felt to be Nick Saban on Saturday night? Just a series of L's. I can't imagine all the things that Saban was trying to do to stop that from happening in the first place, because there was absolutely no way that this was going to turn out to be a win for him. And what did the game actually turn out to be for him? Three different losses. Nick Saban hadn't lost three games in a year since 2010. He caught three in one day. Whoop, better you than me. All right, Gabe, I imagine you have not paid that much historical attention to Memphis basketball, what is now the University of Memphis.
You would imagine correct.
Do you even have a recollection of when it used to be Memphis State?
No. This is news to me right now.
Yeah, no, they became Memphis. I don't even know what year, but fairly recently. Like, when Penny Hardaway played there, they were Memphis State. And, like, now I am at that age where I look at schools and I tell you what they used to be called. Right? Like, that's where I am. That's, you know, I've made a measure of peace with that. That's where I am. I'm at that place. But anyway, so Memphis has had, through time, three players that, like, really jump out of note. When you talk about, like, legendary Memphis basketball players, there are really three. Like, you talk about Derrick Rose, but he's kind of there for a year. That don't count the same way. One of them is Larry Finch. And Larry Finch was the best player on the 1973 team that lost to UCLA in the national championship game, where Bill Walton went 21 for 22 from the floor. He later became the head coach at Memphis, where he coached another guy we'll talk about in a minute. Memphis legend number two is a gentleman named Keith Lee, and I will never forget when a radio caller in North Carolina told me that he once saw Keith Lee at the dog track in a pink fur. Because what is more Memphis than Jerry Curl, Keith Lee at the dog track in a pink fur? They went to the Final Four while Keith Lee was there. Dana Kirk was the head coach. That is, prior to Calipari, the probably most consistent run of success that Memphis has had. Dana Kirk wound up being indicted for a slew of charges, tax fraud, like all kinds of course, Memphis, like tax fraud and all of this stuff. And they eventually vacated all the stuff that happened there, including that trip to the Final Four. The third legend of Memphis basketball is Anthony Hardaway, who I guess most of you guys know as Penny. I guess so. I mean, most of me knows as Penny anyway. But Penny Hardaway. They went to the Elite Eight with Penny Hardaway in 1992, where they lost to Cincinnati in the Elite Eight round, by the way, for the fourth time that season, which had to be miserable. The next year, Penny came back. They ain't really get that thing cracking. But Penny is to Memphis like, I'm trying to think of who to throw out here as the names for people so you can understand, like, what Penny Hardaway means to the city of Memphis. It's not just like, oh, Penny was good at basketball, Penny was from Memphis, Penny played for Memphis. That's not saying nearly enough. Like, I'm from Houston. The best basketball player that Houston has produced is Clyde Drexler, who is a Hall of Fame basketball player, played at the University of Houston. Like, it's very comparable. Penny means something to Memphis that so easily trumps what Clyde Drexler means to Houston. Like, Penny is like what, Iverson is for them Tidewater Cats. Steve Francis kind of used to be that guy in D.C. Isaiah Thomas was once that guy for Chicago. Derrick Rose has kind of moved into that place. Like, he is the one. All right. So Penny became a high school basketball coach. He had run an AAU program. That had been a strong thing. He came to coach at East High School in Memphis. They want to run a state championships. And while Penny was there, there's this kid named James Wiseman who was living in Nashville. And Penny paid what it cost to get the Wiseman family to move from Nashville in order to play in Memphis. As you might imagine, the high school athletics authority around there was like, oh, hold on a second. They looked into it. I don't know what their rules are or whatever it is, but they said it was okay. So Wiseman came. They won them state championships at East. While Penny was the head coach at Memphis East High School, they fired Tubby Smith. Big part of why they fired Tubby Smith was Tubby ain't understand what the job was. And the big thing was there are these kids, the Lawson twins. I think they wound up, and I don't think they're twins, but they're brothers. But they wound up at Kansas. And one of their father was an assistant at Memphis. And Tubby demoted him. Like, either way it went, he was not going to be a coach who sat on the front row there. And so what do you think happened? That dude went and got another job. What do you think happened when he went and got the other job? That's right. He took his kids with him. What the hell are you doing? Right? And so, look, Memphis wants to win, and specifically, Memphis wants to win with players from Memphis. Memphis fans are not here for the best players from the area moving away. No. They want those guys to stick around. Memphis would be perfectly happy with a team with 12 dudes from Memphis. Right? That's the way that they want to play it there. That is the local team. That is their basketball team, and they want it. That's why you hire Penny Hardaway. Because, again, Penny Hardaway is the legend in Memphis. Ain't going to be no whole lot of really good players in Memphis that are going to go play for anybody other than Penny. That's the way they see that. And so James Wiseman was the first example of this. Like, nah, we bringing these dudes in. And then you look at it. Memphis got the number one recruiting class in America. Right? I mean, they got the Boogie Ellis kid from California. I'm not sure where the Precious, I'm assuming he's Nigerian. I'm not sure where he is from. But they got those boys in, but the big one is Wiseman. And Gabe, have you seen Wiseman?
I have. He's a big boy.
Oh, man. I asked somebody who covers the industry. I was like, what you got on Wiseman? And he was like, look, I'm not a Wiseman expert, but from what I can tell, he's going to be a guy that looks better in the NBA than he does in college. And, oh, my God, what in the world do you think he's going to look like in the NBA? Because he looked like a monster, I tell you, in college. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, man. So, anyway, remember I told you all that stuff about, like, the moving and all that. So, Memphis was told that James Wiseman was ineligible. And the reason they ruled that he was ineligible was because they deemed that Penny Hardaway was a booster. And the basis for Penny being a booster is actually not simply that he played at Memphis, but the basis for him being a booster is that he made a $1 million gift to the institution years ago. And so as a result, he as booster pays for the move that is accepting an improper benefit from a booster. And that's how we wind up where we are now with the James Wiseman situation. And $11,000 is apparently what it costs to move. $11,000 is going to be over the NCAA's little ridiculous thresholds on these matters, right? Like, that's the kind of thing that means you just ain't going to be eligible no more. So they laid that down. Right after they laid that down on Friday, there was a report that a Shelby County judge, Shelby County being the county that Memphis is in, a Shelby County judge then deemed that Wiseman was immediately eligible. Gabe, I imagine every single judge in Shelby County would have put in that same injunction. Every single one.
They want to see the man play.
That's right. This is about Memphis, right? This is about Memphis. And so, yeah, he's back out there. And so what the NCAA has said, just so you know, like as a matter of protocol, is that if we deem you ineligible and then the courts say that you are eligible, we don't care what the courts say, right? So, yeah, you can go out here and you can play, but you are still going to be ineligible in our eyes. And Memphis has said, I guess you got to do what you got to do, huh? And so he's going to be out here playing. One thing I also didn't realize about the NCAA is their punishments aren't really binding in that way, which is to say that the authority to suspend and to make somebody ineligible and all that stuff actually falls on the president of the institution. And the president of Memphis is like, nope, this boy is going to play. And so they basically flipped their middle finger at the NCAA and said that Wiseman is going ball. And I'm fascinated by this. Let me tell you a couple reasons. Like, aside from, you know, my general NCAA level outrage, I don't even think I need to give that to you in this case. Memphis feels picked on, right? Remember, you probably remember this. We talked about this with Stephen Godfrey last week, where we're like, when the guys outside start rising up a little bit too fast, it ain't long before the NCAA shows up. Remember, we talked about that with Houston and with Ole Miss?
Got to cut them down.
That's right. That, to me, is what this is. The NCAA could have let this slide. They could have. And, by the way, the NCAA has known about this. They made Wiseman eligible in May. I mean, they cleared him in May to play. Like, this is not something that just surfaced. Everybody knew about this from the jump. If they were going to shut this down, they could have so easily shut this down early. They didn't do that. They let him get on campus. Then, apparently, I'm assuming they let Memphis know, look, if you play him, he's going to be eligible. And Memphis said, And Memphis said, all right, I guess he's just going to be ineligible. And then they played him. And now we've got what could be a fascinating standoff, because if they keep playing him and Memphis makes the tournament and does something like goes to the Final Four or God knows win the national championship and somebody from the NCAA got to hand him the trophy. Woo! That's going to be a lot. That's going to be a lot. But let me get back to what I was saying about Memphis feeling picked on. They went to the Final Four in the 80s. They took that banner down. Derrick Rose's SAT was approved by the NCAA clearinghouse. They then came back later after the fact and then deemed his SAT invalid, deemed him ineligible, and then took the banner down and will not let them raise it. Keep in mind, and this is the point that they're going to make all the time, after what happened with Corey Maggette at Duke, nobody made them take down that 99 Final Four banner. Nobody did. And so what you got here with Memphis is a program that feels like they're getting picked on, that when they turn out to be good, that when they get this crack and all of a sudden there's somebody that can't tolerate this. And now it's got to come down. And they're not standing for it. Let me tell you the other reason they're not standing for it. Because they had the experience of 2008. And what that is to say is they remember what it felt like. They got all the memories. They know all that stuff. And they know in a different way than is obvious, even though it is obvious, you can't go back in time. And so for them, they want to go out here and do all this winning. They want to win as much as they can. And if you decide after the fact that you want to act like it didn't happen, you can act like it didn't happen. We not going to act like it didn't happen. We remember it. We going to ride this thing all the way out. And that is exactly what they are going to do here with James Wiseman, right? I just want to ask the NCAA this question. Why are y'all so counterproductive? Like, I know they got a lot going on. They standing in a swirl of a bunch of stuff. They got to, you know, get this thing figured out, you know, with the, you know, kids want money and stuff like that. And they're standing up now for the authority of their rules, because what's happening is the courts are being like, y'all's rules are bogus. You know, these legislatures are like, nah, y'all's rules are silly. They are standing up for the sanctity of their rules. So I understand to a degree why it is that they would have to lay the hammer on this one, though I would have thought that they would have laid the hammer well before, so they don't even have to go through this, right? I get that. But at the same time, baby, y'all hustling backwards. Wiseman is the single most interesting college basketball player this year. Like, you might make an argument that the most interesting college basketball player is actually not playing college basketball, and that's LaMelo Ball. But this is the most interesting college basketball player. Penny and Memphis is the most interesting college basketball story. A wing of sport, by the way, that has not done very much to intrigue the masses. Like, Wiseman isn't going to be Zion necessarily, but is as close as they got probably this year. You know, so like other than Zion, like when's the last time America was really just like, yo, this college basketball thing is where it's at? It ain't really happening that way. You got a chance for that right here. You got a recognizable name as a coach, and you got a player that people are talking about maybe being the number one overall pick. Only y'all dumbasses would try to find a way to take that dude off television. Like, only you. Well, look at this time where people seem to care less about college basketball than ever. With only you would be like, yeah, now let's make people care even less than they cared already. Dog, what are you doing? Why would you do this? they have decided that that's the way that they want to live. And Memphis has decided we going to live the only way we know how to live, which is how they be living in Memphis. Get ready for a fun season, because how they be living in Memphis, I wouldn't do it myself, but it's a lot of fun. Gabe, do you play fantasy football?
I haven't for the last couple of years.
So I play fantasy football. I play every year with the same group of people, some friends of mine from way back. I've been playing in this league maybe about 15 years now, like somewhere there. I've been playing for a very long time. And part of why I play with them is I have no interest in playing in fantasy football with new people, because, Gabe, you know what's up. All new people want to do is, like, celebrate the fact that they beat me.
Dance around on your grave?
That's all they want to do. They want to be able to tell their friends that they beat me. And I personally don't really want no parts of that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't get no win out of that. But that's what they want. That's what they're trying to get out of this. And I don't want to participate in that. So I just play with these cats I've been playing with before. And I got to say, I have been a disappointing fantasy football performer. I haven't, like, over the years, I haven't really done well. I haven't won a trophy in quite a long time. Ask me what my record is.
Tell the listeners what your record is in fantasy football, bro.
9-1.
9-1. Wow. Okay. That is, I didn't expect it to go that way.
Ask me who is leading the league in points scored.
Bomani Jones.
That's right.
All right.
Now ask me who is leading the league in points allowed.
Also Bomani Jones.
I have given up the least points and I have scored the most points. And I just want to speak to the fantasy football players out there. And I just want to ask, what does it say about me that I feel as though the fact that I have given up the least points speaks to the level of dominance that my team has?
Fantasy sports is fickle, man.
Yeah, yeah. But this is all I'm saying, right? This is all I'm saying. You know them dudes on the other side, when they got to look up and they see my fantasy football team and they see Johnny Law, and they see them dudes get off the bus, they got to know they ain't got no chance, right? Like, I think that's what's happening. They know they don't have a chance. They ain't got no coach in the locker room motivating them. Like, I'd be in the locker room motivating my guys, right? What do you think, Aaron Jones was just going to score 3 touchdowns this week just because they were playing against the Panthers? Of course not. I had to go talk to that dude. Dalvin Cook, it's a big game against the Cowboys. Hey, man, people saying Zeke better than you. You know you better than Zeke. I told him that. I'm the one who told him that. Did you know that? I told him that. It was right before the game. I was like, hey, man, you know what they out here saying about you, right? I'm the one who told them that. Your boy Drew Brees, he went out here for 11 fantasy points this week. I was playing against Drew Brees. Come on now. Do you think it's a coincidence that Drew Brees was out here looking like that in that game against the horrible Falcons? You think it was a coincidence?
Are you making a pitch right now for, like, your new fantasy sports commercial for ESPN with Bomani Jones just, like, whispering in the ear of different NFL players and getting them to perform on Sundays?
I actually don't think I should sell myself short in that way. I am pitching myself to be the coach of an actual team.
Oh, okay. All right.
That's what I think it should be.
We'll continue on. I'm sorry for interrupting.
I ain't really getting nothing out of Jared Goff, but that's cool. I just told him, man, hey, just hand the ball off. Nick Chubb, he our other running back. Just give him the ball, man. Let him make this happen. I mean, Gabe, I've been out here dominating these fools, man. Like, I cannot believe how dominant I've been. And what I really can't believe on top of how dominant I've been, I cannot believe the way that this has affected the way that I view myself. I feel like the man. I really look at me and I'm like, yo, man, you did that. Like, you do understand I'm overcoming injuries too, right? Adam Thielen, I had to overcome that injury, man. I won a game last week where Adam Thielen came out there, didn't have no catch, and then had to get out of it. Or he had one catch, and then he got out of there because he got hurt. I made that. I put him on the bench. I couldn't even play him this week. And I still came out here victorious, even with my quarterback putting up 3 points. No, can't everybody do that? Can't everybody do that? It's dominance. It's dominance.
Now, are you sharing this dominance with Pablo and Cortez at work down there?
Every day.
Okay, because I was going to say, it's kind of an interesting turn here where, you know, the fantasy football league that you're currently in, you're in because you don't want people hollering at you when you suck.
That's right.
But when you're good,
that's
you
right.
want everybody
that's right.
to know about
That's
it.
Right. But to be fair, all the other people in the league, when they are good, they want everybody to know, but they ain't got nobody that going to, like, dog them like people be dogging me. You understand what I'm saying?
They also don't have the platform that you do, so you can shout it a little louder.
Yeah, yeah. I ain't out here putting no names on it, though, right? I'm letting them, like, lurk in silence when it comes to these matters. But see, Cortez and one of our Charleses. We got two Charleses on the staff. Cortez and Charles are both Packers fans, and so I got Aaron Jones out here doing business, and so they appreciate hearing about my fantasy team because they know I'm the one that's making it happen, you know? Like, they need me to come in there and give that motivational speech, and then their Packers wind up achieving success. Hadn't thought about it like that, had you?
Everybody wins.
That's right. And one last thing, since I mentioned it briefly, I probably should have done a whole segment about this, but now I wanted to let you guys know that I can be silly about fantasy just like you guys, but the best rivalry in the NFL is Falcons Saints, right? Like, I don't really think that much about it, the football part of it, whatever it is. I'm talking about just pure, absolute hatred. Falcons Saints is the best rivalry in the NFL. Coincidentally, it is also the blackest rivalry in the NFL. It's a lot of circumstances that lead to that. I've talked to you about it before. Big part of it, of course, being Hurricane Katrina and all the New Orleansians moving into Atlanta and the Atlanta people subsequently hating them and then everything that happens. I once went to the mall in Atlanta. I once went to Lenox Square on a Monday afternoon where the Falcons and Saints were playing on Monday night. And oh my goodness, what an amazing sight that was, right? Like, it's a thing here. And as many of you know, I used to root for the Falcons. I grew up rooting for the Falcons. And then I quit that narcotic like 10, 11, 12 years ago after the quarterback got caught fighting dogs. And I just decided this relationship was not providing me nearly as much as I was investing in it. And then I rolled out of there. But I still hate the Saints. And I have not been able to stop hating the Saints. And going into that game, the Falcons were 1-7 and the Saints were 7-1. And the Falcons dominated them. Dominated them, I tell you. Dominated them. And it took me a while because I was in California and I was busy doing things, but I got the chance to get on Twitter and send out what I send in these moments to the Saints fans. The paper bag. You guys remember when you used to wear the paper bags to games? I remember when you used to wear paper bags to games. You remember when you used to wear paper bags to games? Did you want to put on a paper bag while the Falcons were stomping you? Because I feel like if I was in your situation, I would want that, especially if I had a historical legacy of wearing paper bags to games, right? Like, if that was in my DNA, like it's in y'all's DNA, y'all won that Super Bowl that one time, but the paper bag of the loser still remains in your DNA. If I was you, I probably would have put a paper bag on after that defeat. That's what I would have done. I'd have put that paper bag on. I wouldn't want nobody to see my face. I would probably be crying. I imagine that some of you might have been crying. I imagine y'all, some of y'all are calling me all kinds of names as things stand right now, as you hear me talk about this, right? And I just want to say this for you, Saints fans. I think your team has a chance to win a Super Bowl. I really do. Like, that's not an exaggeration, right? Drew plays as well as Teddy did. I believe you guys will win a Super Bowl. Your defense is good. Your offense is good. Special teams are good. I think that you have a chance to win a Super Bowl. And when you're on that last drive, marching to win that Super Bowl, do you know how funny it would be if you were on the wrong side of an egregious pass interference call? And can you imagine how funny it would be if that happened? And Sean Payton challenged the pass interference, and it was the most obvious pass interference call, but the league was still out here not overturning pass interference calls. Do you know how funny it would be, how mad you would be if that happened, how furious you guys would be if that went down? Do you know how, oh my God, y'all would probably be burning stuff up. Y'all be out in the streets fighting each other. They'd have to get the horses, the police on the horses to get y'all calmed down. That's when you know they mean business, when they break out the horses. It would be all of that if that happened. And hey, maybe that would feel worse than taking an embarrassing loss for the Falcons. See? Glass half full. Glass half full.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, this first story comes from Travel.
My name's Ali Conti, and I wrote an article for Vice called "I Accidentally Uncovered a Nationwide Scam on Airbnb." So about 2 months ago, my friends and I booked an Airbnb in Chicago to go to a music festival. And about 5 minutes before we were supposed to check into that Airbnb, we got a phone call from a guy saying the previous tenant had flooded it. Would we mind making a decision really quickly to move into a bigger, nicer place that he also managed? We didn't want to get a hotel or anything, so we just kind of went with it. And when we got to the new place, it was completely trash. There was no real furniture besides beds. Holes were punched in the wall. walls. It was very obvious. No one actually lived there. It was kind of like a flop house, I would say. The guy told us he was unable to fix the plumbing issue after a couple nights, and we needed to leave because new people were coming to stay at the flop house. So we got a hotel, and I decided I would deal with getting a refund later. You know, the host ghosted during this process. Airbnb was super unhelpful because they needed to get his side of the story. So I started kind of digging into it as a reporter and trying to track down this guy myself. I went through property records, I went through corporation records, and was able to, after interviewing a bunch of other people who had fallen for this scam, get in touch with him through his company and ultimately link him to almost 100 seemingly fake listings, at least kind of dicey listings, in about 8 different places. So went to Airbnb with this evidence. They did not a lot to kind of take this guy off of their platform. The FBI reached out to me, and Airbnb has promised that they're going to try to verify all 7 million of their listings by the end of 2020.
So here's my thing about Airbnb, just as a general idea, after reading that story and just, you know, being around the world and stuff. We need to be very worried about a company that can make this much money while having so little concern for customer service. Like, that is a horrible sign for all of us in all these businesses. Because the big thing in that story was, hey, I hit Airbnb and let them know I got a problem. And there's little to nothing. Airbnb cares so much more about the host than it does about the customers. And that is really wild and backwards. And that does not portend well.
Yeah, that's really, really bad. While I was on vacation this summer, I had a bad experience with a particular hotel that I will not name on this podcast, but I booked it through a travel agent. And so I was trying to get reimbursed or trying to get like money off the bill. And the travel agent was like, oh, well, the hotel has to authorize this. The hotel was like, well, the travel people got to authorize this. So everybody's playing this, you know, game of tennis back and forth. No one's accepting responsibility. And in this instance, you know, with Allie, with Airbnb saying, oh, well, I can't do anything until the host gets back to us. And then the host just not accepting responsibility whatsoever. The customer is left in like the worst possible position. There's nothing that they can do about it.
Yeah, no, man. But like, so like cryptocurrency, my problem with it has always been something wrong with my money. I need a branch. Where the branch? I need a branch. Airbnb ain't got no branch.
This next story comes from Health.
My name is Janelle LaSalle, and I'm a journalist and cannabis researcher. Contrary to popular belief, users who consume cannabis tend to weigh less than their non-stone counterparts. Wanting to break this paradoxical fact down led me to a cannabinoid scientists are looking at as a potential weight loss agent, THCV. THCV is a phytocannabinoid, a compound produced by cannabis plants. Phytocannabinoids act in a similar way to endocannabinoids that our bodies produce. Endocannabinoids are compounds that act as messengers in our endocannabinoid system. The endocannabinoid system's purpose is to maintain homeostasis or balance, and it does so by regulating appetite, sleep, mood, glucose, fat metabolism, and even our immune system through cell signaling via various enzymes and neurotransmitters. The two main receptor sites in the endocannabinoid system are CB1 and 2. These receptors also regulate the reward and aversion centers in the brain. A paper published by the International Association for Cannabis as Medicine in 2004 found that pure THCV had anorexic properties that was effective even at very low doses. Naturally, this finding propelled companies like Sanofi to develop a drug that acted similarly to THCV, Rimonabant. A paper published a year later found it was very successful at reducing weight in obese patients. They theorized that Rimonabant, like THCV, exhibited this effect as it prevented other compounds from binding to the CB1 receptor site. This could theoretically block the CB1 receptor's ability to stimulate the appetite. A paper published in 2008 also showed that THCV reduced the amount of time non-obese mice spent near a food hopper. Another research paper published in this year's British Journal of Pharmacology found that giving THCV reduced nicotine cravings and use in mice. This is further prompting the idea that the CB1 and CB2 receptors have a role in regulating how satisfying food is to eat. By binding to CB1, THCV could theoretically diminish our craving for food, as well as control insulin levels and our appetite for sugar. We also think THCV can produce an energy increase, although it's short-lived. Now, many brands are trying to ride this THC wave, offering consumers strains or edibles high in THCV. But until we understand how all of the compounds in the endocannabinoid system work, we can't decisively point to THCV and say, this is going to make you lose weight.
So they're about to sell weed as a weight loss, too?
Yeah, man.
Hey, dude, I got news for you. If they can successfully convince people of that, it is cancel Christmas on this. Like, it, if they convince people of this, do you realize how much money everybody's going to make? Like, I don't know if this is true, but if it is, they can make anything into anything if you tell people it'll help them lose weight. Like, think about this for a second. Gabe, don't nobody, like, really enjoy diet soda? Like, people work themselves into it, but nobody really enjoys diet soda. But they sell so much diet soda because people just out here trying to lose weight. If that's what they do with things that people don't actually like, what they gonna do with something the streets got love for? There you go.
All right, Bomani, this last story comes from Tech and Security.
This is Reese Tebow. I'm a staff writer at the Washington Post. I recently wrote about a case of intimate partner violence in the Australian state of Tasmania. For months, a man was stalking his ex-girlfriend in real time. To do so, he allegedly weaponized some simple technology, including a smartphone app that allowed him to track and control her car. Without the woman's knowledge, the man was able to turn her Land Rover on and off and control the vehicle's windows. He helped pay for the car when the two were together, and that gave him access to her registration information, which allowed him to set up the app on his phone. We don't know the exact app, but it sounds strikingly similar to Land Rover's In Control app, which allows owners to remote start and track car locations. This all came out in a court hearing that was first reported by the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, and the disturbing case highlights a troubling trend that domestic violence advocates have warned about for years. As surveillance and tracking technology becomes more advanced, stalking and other forms of intimate partner violence can become more difficult to fight. One of those advocates, Eric Olson with the National Network to End Domestic Violence, told me that these are modern forms of old tactics and behaviors. The behavior is not new, but the technology is.
Yo, it is really problematic how many of these things that we enact in the name of, like, safety and convenience and to be able to check all this, how easy it is for somebody to turn it around and then make it about you. You know what I mean? Like, you decide you're going to set up security cameras in your house because you want to be safe. And then somebody figure out how to get in your camera. And now you the one being watched and you the one who doesn't feel safe. You know, you just want to be able to put something on your car to, like, keep up with where it's going, you know, in case somebody boosted or whatever it is. And now somebody watching you in every place that you go in. Somebody can even get you off of that Find My iPhone if they know your password. Had you thought about that?
I hadn't thought about that. It really is terrifying that every level of, you know, new innovation needs to come with that much more security in place before that innovation really reaches the marketplace, because otherwise things like this can happen.
Another thing too, and this is just kind of interpersonal stuff, somebody I heard once said, this is like really kind of a fascinating thing. And they're like, hey, the person you marry is not the person you divorce, right? And so the person that you entrust in a certain way on the front end may not be a person that you should trust in that way on the back end, but they already got all the tools very often, you know? And it's like, so what do you do? And that's like, man, it's hard being a woman in this world. Like, that's what I get out of that too. It's hard being a woman in this world.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right. Well, we decided that rather than go to the masses to get some conversation today, we are going to one man live from Chicago, DJ Mike Hitman. Mike, what's going on, man?
What's going on, Bo? How you feeling, man?
I'm good, man. Just got back from California.
Why you out there? There's no fire.
It was a wedding. The wedding was fire, and there was some fire, but it was not, like, nothing but fires.
Man, who planned a wedding in November?
It was warm in California. You can do that out there.
Bo, you come from a cold place to go to California to a warm place. Then when you get back, you're going back to a cold place. Think about it.
Oh, I've been thinking about it all morning.
I'm not going to wear a fur from Chicago to get to California. You got to take it off. I like to keep the fur on when I'm going to place. I don't want to take it off and send somebody in the hotel take it. No, you ain't going to get me. Heck no.
Hey, man, what happened to your teams this weekend, man? Like, what's going on with the Cowboys?
Man, that, who can't win the big game? The gingerbread, man. Who's not a coach? The gingerbread, man. He is the dumbest coach I ever saw. Let me tell you something, folks. It's second down. Zeke is not doing anything. You're throwing the ball over the place. You score there as a 12-man. Spread them out. Dak, run up the middle. First down. They go to the ball game. What do our coach do? Oh, we're going to throw a pass to Zeke. You ain't supposed to be calling a pass all year. And now you want to throw it to him. That's what you call it, gingerbread, man. I don't trust nobody who's going to get Botox.
Is it that bad, Mike? I didn't get to see the game.
It was bad, Bo. Bo, you got a coach on the sideline with that Botox looking like Holly Dooley. Can't all he do is smile. You think he want to smile all the time? He know. He know, and I know. I'm getting tired of paying his. I'm getting tired of paying for him. I just told NFL Network, I'm telling them the DirecTV, I'm counting the ticket. I'm getting tired of paying Jason Garrett because he getting money off of that stuff. And I ain't finna get no man the gingerbread free money and you can't win a game. I could have went over there and won that game, Bo.
Oh, man. And your boys lost on Saturday, Alabama.
Oh, roll tide. You know what, Bo? That guy, I don't know where he's from, that coach for LSU. When he talk, he scares me. He sounds like Preacher Preacher.
I'm the mummy.
That stuff will scare you. And when you got a guy can't talk, you don't understand, you sure lose the game. Alabama was so soft like a wet pillow. It was soft. Nick Saban had lost it, Bo.
You say he lost it?
Yeah, he lost it. Look at the hair. He's losing the hair. When every time you lose the hair, you're scared to cut it. That's when you know you're losing things. You're losing things. Look at the top of his head. He losing. And one more thing, Bo. Jerry Jones. I know you listen to the Morning Jones. I know you listen to the Right Time. I know you listen to High Noon. I know you listen to Bo Monty Jones. Do me one favor. Thanksgiving's coming around. Fire this guy. Make our cranberry, our meal be good for Thanksgiving. And we will get back to the Salvation Army, Jerry Jones. But get rid of that gingerbread man. We don't even want to watch the Cunninghams no more. We saw Happy Days. We know what's going to happen at the end.
I thought you was going to make him Opie Taylor rather than Richie Cunningham.
He's Richie Cunningham. You know why? When a man sit up and let me ask you something. The man wears suits. I ain't never saw no woman under his arm. He ain't got no game. If he had game, he could coach the Cowboys to win. When a man ain't got no game, he ain't got no game. He got one liner. Hello.
I think he's married, man.
Anybody can be money married when you got money. Look at his teeth. If you got money, you can fix your teeth. You can get a woman. Don't never get that wrong. Any woman will be a fool not to turn a man down where I've got money. Trust me. And, folks, you know what you said? You said something that I didn't realize. It was a young lady. Everywhere I went, she was there. I'm like, how is this woman there? When I don't even know how she know where I'm at. And then my partner, good gang, said, Mike, you let her use your phone. And I was like, what that got to do? She bumped it. I said, what is a bump? You can bump. I didn't know you could bump a phone, take all your information. So I made best of people. I said, it's going to be a young lady, light-skinned lady, going to come in with long hair. I don't know what color it is. I got a bet. I bet she be here. I said, no, she not. I said, what? $100. Boy. I was winning money every time. I love when she come. Because I ain't get she ain't my woman. She just there.
Mike, what else going on up there, man?
I mean, Paul, sad news. Bad news, I forgot to tell you. Spanish Fly died, Bo.
Oh, no.
Yeah, Spanish Fly died. And he had a good, Bo, we had a going away party. We buried the man in his favorite coat. The purple coat, Bo. The fur coat. Because wherever he goes, it's going to be cold. Because he liked to travel. My man liked to travel. Good game. Good game, me. We buried Spanish Fly. And a good day, and Bo, we partied. Because Spanish Fly like a party. We party. I don't understand why people put money in the casket. I told his mom we just gonna dress him up in his fur coat. He likes the purple coat, but what are you gonna do with that money? Once you're dead, you're dead.
Man, well, I hate to hear that, man, but everything else been good.
Everything been good in Chicago. It's damn cold. This how you be high, it's going to be cold in Chicago, and it ain't even December. But one thing I like about when it's cold, Bo, you know, one thing I do like about when it's cold in Chicago, they keep all the dudes off the street. They ain't down with their pants off their That's the only thing I like. I like to see when it's cold, because these dudes is not out. And I don't like a man who don't wear decent clothes. I like a man. Hey, hold on, Bo. What do that young man who always called me, what do he wear? If he wears sweatshirts and khaki.
Nah, Gabe's pretty well dressed.
Do he got hair?
Gabe's got hair.
He got real teeth in his mouth.
Gabe's got teeth.
He got benefits. That's what I always tell you. You got to have that insurance, Bo. If you ain't got insurance, you're a lost person. You got to have insurance. And is Gabe married?
Gabe is married.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to educate you something. If you wasn't married, always find a woman with benefits. Remember that. You look, always look for somebody with benefits. You never know when you might need something. That's the deal, Bo.
Mike, last thing, man. Your Celtics are winning. I don't want to just pick on you about the other
stuff. Hold on. I'm glad you brought that up. We got the lucky foot, man. You can coach a non-superstar team, but you can't coach a star team. And that's what I like. You got to make a team that ain't no star. Kyrie then ruined the Celtics. Now look at them. We got unknown players. You know what I call that, Bo? People who want to play and want to win. You don't have to have a superstar, have a team. All you got to do is have that golden green. You know what that golden green means, Bo? You got that leprechaun. And when that leprechaun's sitting right, on top of the backboard, you know when you shoot the ball, he's like, that's a perfect form to let a guy sit on the backboard that's waiting you shoot it, and he's just slapping it back. That's when you self-deprive, man. Tummy point. Self-deprive. And, Bo, watch out for my man, Warzone Time. You know what Warzone Time is for, Bo?
You talking about Robert Williams.
Yes, right. War Time. Roll Time. So I call it War Time. That bag is a Skywalker leaper. And the Celtics might do something that people really don't believe. We might go to the finals, or we might lose, but it's okay. We're doing it. Hey, Bo, let me ask you one more thing. You see my man Carson? You saw when he came to the league?
Yeah.
He had the dreadlocks and he cut his hair?
Yeah.
Who he look like?
I don't know. Who you think?
Derrick Rose.
Think so?
Damn right. Look at both of them was kind of confused and looking guys I ever saw. No. They were built the same, played the same, but they had no game. They both look confused to me. And, Bo, one more thing. Hold up. Pretty lady, you don't supposed to be out here. What are you doing out here in this cold? Get in this car. We can go play there. I'm the man for heaven. Have a good one, Bo. This is another year ride.
All right, man. Ladies and gentlemen. Thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. But man, Gabe Bassein handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors, Ali Conti. Check out her story at Vice about an Airbnb scam. Thank you to Janelle LaSalle. Check out her story on weight loss weed at Rolling Stone. Also, thanks to Reese Thibault of The Washington Post. Check out his story about a disturbing man stalking his ex in Australia and the technology that he used. Thanks to Mike Hitman. Can't forget about that one. Be sure to check out the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, her dog. This week, Mina chats with Jackson Bevins of SB Nation Seahawks blog about Seattle's Monday Night Football victory over the 49ers. Download and subscribe to the Mina Kimes Show. Also, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.